You're listening to a UC San Diego podcast.
Okay. Let's get started. Homework's down the front if you haven't already. It's due now. Hope it wasn't too hard. Assignment one is going fantastically. So, you know, real milestones being passed. No entries by anyone so far in any of the tasks. So, you know, I realize you've all got fantastic, devious solutions up your sleeves. You want to keep your ideas secret to the last possible minute. But, I mean, I think we're missing out on here. Like, anyone who had submitted anything would have the glory of having their name read out at the beginning of class, whatever absurd username they had chosen, whatever, you know, political idea they wanted to put forth. They would, all they had to do was submit something, you'd be number one. It's not a very high bar to be on top for a week just yet, so get submitting. Of course, you know, homework three will be all about trying to get started on this assignment, so within a week or two's time, you should have something up and running. A few other administrative things. First, hopefully, as you remember, the midterms are going to be this time next week in class. This Wednesday, we'll do a little bit of prep, and today I'll start text mining, which we'll come back to in week seven. And there'll be no class the Wednesday after the midterm. I'll be away. Hopefully, you won't mind having a day off after all the horror of the midterm itself. Okay? Everything good about that? Okay, so let's move on to text mining, which will take us through all of today and probably the beginning of week seven. I'll try to cover enough today so you'll be able to do everything that is needed of you for the first assignment, especially that question about predicting the helpfulness of reviews, where presumably you'd want to use some kind of text features. But really, today and in week seven, we're looking at all of these kind of predictive tasks we looked at so far again, but with the new lens of text, which is going to somehow change the kind of predictors, the kind of classifiers, the kind of dimensionality reduction techniques that are going to be appropriate. So what can we do with text? Well, we can do regression-type problems. So given some document about a particular subject, could we train a regressor that says, does this document have a positive or a negative opinion about the subject? Okay, so you might like to build features that are based on the words in that document, kind of figure out which features are associated with positive, which features are associated with negative sentiment. So maybe a word like better would cause you to think that a document is positive. A word like flatulent might cause you to think the sentiment is negative. A bigram like flatulent buzz, well, I don't know. But that's the kind of thing we're going to try and find out today, all right? That would be regression. Of course, we can also use text for various types of classification tasks. So given some news article, for example, can we figure out which of some discrete set of categories that news article is discussing? Maybe you see the word apple, you think it's about agriculture. But if you see the word apple with the word computers, you think it's about tech. And if you see words like apple with electric car, you think it's about some combination of tech plus automated. So same kind of multi-class classification problems we've seen with regular sorts of feature vectors, but using text is going to make this somehow different, perhaps. Also, simple sorts of recommender systems can be built using text, like how can we build some system that personalizes document recommendation to my interests? So which of these news articles, this is from the New York Times, based on the words used in an article, is likely to be relevant to my interests? So I don't know what I clicked on, but apparently New York Times thinks I like burritos a lot, so I recommend some article about Chipotle and some article about eating lots of calories. I don't know, based on past articles that I've apparently shown interest in. And of course, there's the other type of recommender system, which can surface something like related content. So a big part of what we saw last week with recommender systems was to say, how can we come up with similarity measures that say whether two items are similar based on the users who purchased them, or whether two users are similar based on the items they've purchased. Okay, so we came up with definitions that used sets, the definitions that used angles between vectors and various notions of correlation to define if items and users are similar based on these past sort of matrices of interactions. So maybe we want to do the same thing using text. Okay, so given some article, this is an article about a recipe, maybe we'd like to find other articles that we feel are linguistically similar. And what we're going to find out with text is that's going to present its own whole new set of challenges, because measuring similarity between text documents is particularly difficult, given that there's this huge fraction of words like the and of and are, which kind of overwhelm the volume of your feature vector, even though they're totally irrelevant to where the two documents should be regarded as similar or not. So we need to go through some additional steps to figure out, in this document, which of the words are somehow relevant or which of the words are somehow important, and can we use that to define some notion of similarity that we'll find out that some other recipes about meatloaf or whatever are likely to be related to this document, whereas articles about the Midwest or something are not. Okay, so, and of course, tasks like what you have to do for the first assignment are also going to be an example of text mining, right? So to try and figure out whether the review is helpful or not, or whether a particular individual is likely to agree with or disagree with the content of a review, probably we'd like to use some combination of user features and also text features, right? So we might look to find, is this review grammatically reasonable? Is it positive or negative based on what's written in it? More basic things, is it long, short? Does the person use a lot of punctuation? Do they discuss the different aspects that are relevant to the product in order to make their review helpful? So on and so forth. We can use technology like that as well to do things like document summarization. So given some document like a review, could we find out what are the different opinions that people have about that product? Or within a single review, can we sort of pick out the key sentences which best summarize what a person thinks? Or given a particular individual, can we find reviews that are going to be useful to them, or sentences are going to be useful to them? And something that hopefully we can get to today is a simple case study based on this idea. So given all of these beer reviews that we've been working with for a few weeks, can we sort of summarize those or split them up into multiple parts and figure out, okay, which of the different aspects are all of the different sentences in this review talking about? Can I automatically figure out that dark brown with a light tan head refers to how the thing looks, whereas excellent aroma of dark fruit refers to how the thing smells? In this way, we could sort of summarize reviews according to different aspects. We could generate personalized summaries for users who maybe didn't care about look or didn't care about smell too much. So hopefully we'll get to that particular case study today. So anyway, essentially, what we're going to be looking at is trying to revisit all these previous tasks, whether it's dimensionality reduction, whether it's regression or classification. We're going to revisit all of those things using text. So first, we have to come up with good feature representations of documents. Second, we've got to really think about how can we handle, or should we bother handling, the structure of documents. So do we really need things like syntax if we're trying to solve some binary prediction task to say whether the review is positive or negative? Do we care about things like grammar and things like word order, or do we only care about things like the frequency of particular words, which would say the documents are not really structured at all? Which of these two definitions is more helpful in a predictive sense? How can we account for this basic issue I mentioned before when I was talking about defining similarities, which says that in documents, the vast majority of words convey almost no information. They're just sort of filler words that come in between the important ones like and of and art and the. So how can we kind of learn to automatically ignore those words, even though they make up probably the vast majority of our corpus? Finally, not today, we're going to look at how we can find low-dimensional structure in text. So basically applying the same sort of dimensionality reduction techniques we've seen, but to documents. So we can find, for instance, if we have some big corpus of movie reviews, that these have some kind of low-dimensional structure, which could be in the form of different topics. So people talk about action, they talk about sci-fi, they talk about comedy, they talk about romance, So rather than using this very high-dimensional representation of reviews, which would say how much do people use every single word in the dictionary, we come up with a low-dimensional representation, which would just say to what extent do people discuss some small fixed-length set of topics. And that could be just as good in some predictive sense to say whether a person's going to like a movie, to know how much it's about action, how much it's about comedy, how much it's about sci-fi, and so forth. Okay, so I think the problem we have to tackle first in order to do anything with text is how do we come up with a good feature representation for documents? So what we'd like to do is take some text document, whether it's a review or a news article, and describe it using a feature vector. So obviously we have to solve this problem if we want to solve any predictive tasks to find on text. We want to be able to have some fixed length representation so that we can feed it into a linear regressor or an SVM or whatever we like, so that we can figure out which word in a document or which feature that describes a document is going to be associated with positive or negative sentiment or whatever you like. So pretty much every method we've seen so far depends on converting something like this, a document, into a fixed length representation. So I've talked already about kind of the dumb way of doing this, right? Which is what I'm going to stick with for a while, which is just to say, let's take all of the words in the English language, whatever that set is, and we'll just count how many times does each of those words appear in our document. So this will give you a very, 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 very long feature vector. The first entry of that feature vector is saying how many times did the word "ah" occur in the document. The second is saying how many times does the word "aardvark" appear. So on and so forth, up to your alphabetically last word. Okay, that's kind of the naive feature representation we could use to solve any kind of regression and classification problem using text, right? So this is called the bag of words model. And it's called the bag of words model because what we're doing by taking a feature representation like this is we're just completely throwing away any notion of syntax. So if you have some review like this one compared to a randomly ordered set of the same words, these are going to have exactly the same bag of words representation. So what you can say is basically happening is I'm taking all of the words in the first review, putting them into a bag, shaking the bag around, and just pulling them back out one by one. I'm discarding any notion of syntax or structure in that document, and all I'm going to try and do is count the frequency with which certain words are used. So it's a pretty big assumption you're making there. You're essentially saying syntax, grammar, document structure doesn't really matter. All that matters is word frequencies. And whether that's a good assumption or not is really going to depend on what the application is that you're trying to solve. So if you think about something like sentiment analysis, you're just trying to figure out whether this review is positive or negative, maybe syntax doesn't matter. So maybe there's enough words like excellent and strong that cause you to think this is a positive review, even though you didn't keep syntax. On the other hand, maybe you need to see things like what's more complicated here? So maybe retention is good, but low retention is bad. So in that case, you'd have to see the fact that those words appearing together indicates negativity, even though seeing each of them individually did not. So hard to say based on documents like this and a task like sentiment classification whether syntax is something we need or whether it's something we don't. But anyway, let's power forward and see whether this bag of words model is actually going to be particularly effective. So I kind of discussed some issues with this type of representation when we were looking at dimensionality reduction. So you can think of some reasons right off the top of your head why it might not work. I mean, for one, it's absurdly high dimensional, right? The number of words in the English language, well, I don't know what it is. I mean, it's tens of thousands, but the number of words in some random corpora of reviews that humans wrote, it's going to include all misspellings, all proper nouns, all hyphenated words, who knows what. It's going to be much, 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 much larger. A huge fraction of these words are only going to be used a tiny number of times. I mean, things like misspellings may show up only once. So you're going to have some tiny number of words that are, or some tiny number of dimensions in your feature vector that are useful, and some huge number of dimensions that are just junk. What other issues did we have? Well, we don't know how to add new features to this model. If we're trying to train something like, I don't know, we're trying to predict whether some hashtag is trending, we see a brand new hashtag we've never seen before, we don't have a feature corresponding to it, how do we include some new term in our fixed length representation? Well, we don't know either. So, okay, there's a whole bunch of problems, but let's just try and do this for some simple predictive task and solve them as we go along and see where we get stuck. So, let us look at some code again and try and build some fixed length representations of our document. So, we'll start off doing the same things that we've been doing since week one, the same data set at least. We're going to just import a bunch of libraries, write some functions to read the data, and pull in our favorite 50,000 beer reviews. What's actually new here? Well, there are a couple of new libraries that we're importing. One is NLTK, which is the Python natural language toolkit, and the other is the string library. Both of these support some pretty huge variety of string and text and document manipulation operations. You know, God help you if you want to try and do these without using these libraries. I don't know if they exist in other languages, but hopefully everyone's on board with Python by now. Okay, so I've loaded my libraries. I've read in my data. I'll just take the first 5,000 reviews so that I have something which is small enough to actually work with. And let's just start by counting the number of words and counting the number of unique words amongst the first 5,000 reviews. Okay, so what do I have here? I have a default dict. If you haven't seen this object in Python, it's super useful. It's just a dictionary that takes the default value 0, so you don't have to check if the item exists. You can just increment it. I'd also like to keep track of, so I'm going to use that to just count how many times each word appears. I'd also like to figure out how many words I have total. So I'm going to go through each review in my data set. I'm going to pull out the review text field. And I'm going to split that into individual words. It's now just a big single string. I'm going to increment total words, and I'm going to increment the counter for that specific word. Okay. That was pretty easy. So let's see how many words are there in this document. It's about 640,000 words amongst 5,000 reviews, so I don't know, a review is something like 100 words. Any guesses as to how many unique words there are going to be? 500 unique words. People are not convinced by 500. Other guesses? 5,000. You want to go north of 5,000? 10,000? Keep bidding. 36,225. Okay, so that's a maybe shockingly high number. We had 5,000 reviews, 640,000 words, and 36,225 of them were unique. So on average, every review was exposing us to about 10 words we'd never seen before, and about one in every 20 or so words is a new one. So, you know, this seems to be much larger than the what you'd consider to be the number of words in the English language, perhaps, but I think it kind of goes to show there's still a lot of junk in there that we haven't cleaned up. At the very least, though, it does kind of tell you
we're going to need to think a little bit harder
about how to come up with a good fixed length representation. If every time we see a review, we're seeing 10 words that we've never seen before, it's going to be hard to make any reasonable predictions given some held out test set. 36,225 is probably just too big in the first place to come up with a reasonable feature representation, unless we had a huge number of reviews available to us. And you can convince yourself, if you did not 5,000 but 500,000 reviews, this number would keep growing for a really, 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 really long time before it started leveling off. In fact, it'd probably just about never start leveling off, because you're always going to see new proper nouns, you're always going to see new misspellings and who knows what. In something like a data set of reviews, you're going to see people talking about the price of an item. So even things that have a different price are going to show up as being different words, and so on and so forth. So run this yourself on the whole data set. It's never going to stop getting bigger. So what's the first thing we can do? The first thing we can do, I guess, is let's get rid of capitalization and punctuation. So at the moment, we're going to treat two words as being different if one of them appears at the start of a sentence and another one doesn't, or if one of them is followed by a full stop and another one isn't, or a comma or an exclamation mark or whatever you like. So let's just make some kind of simplifying assumption and say, well, it doesn't really matter where a word appears in a sentence. I'm saying this index doesn't matter anyway. So let's just throw away punctuation, let's throw away capitalization, and hopefully I'll have the same amount of predictively useful information, but my dictionary will be much, 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 much smaller. So this is pretty easy to do in Python. We can use this string library to get our set of punctuation characters. When we hit each review, we'll just convert it to lowercase, and we'll filter out all of the characters in that review that are punctuation characters. So we want to keep C for C in all of the characters in that review. If it's not in the punctuation set. Okay, that gives us a list of all the characters. We'll convert it back to a string. And I think we are done. Better close a bracket somewhere. Okay. Revised guesses. What's that? 10,000? 5,000? People are optimistic. So, 20,000. It kind of worked. It kind of didn't work. We got rid of some words. I think it's pretty good progress. So, we dropped about half of our dictionary just by throwing away capitalization and punctuation. So half of our non-unique words were just words we'd seen before, but they were used followed by a comma or a exclamation mark or starting with a capital letter or who knows what. Okay, so what are we down to? 19,426. Still, maybe it's too big. So let's try and cut it down a bit further. Next thing you can do is maybe say different inflections of words actually could correspond to the same concept. So in a beer review, if you see words like drinks, drinking, and drinker, well, they're all talking about drinking. So let's try and just say these words are all equivalent. For whatever my predictive model is, I'd like to assign all of these words the same weight. So I'm just going to go through my document with some replacement rules and find like the unique stem of all of these words. So drinks, drinking, drinker all become drink. What do these ones become? Argue, arguing, argues, arguing, Argus. I don't know what Argus is. I think Argus is a real word. What's the stem, though? Guesses? Something like argue. So, yeah? Is it some god who likes to argue or something? Okay, well, you know, I guess that gives you an indication that this feature might be, this might be a dangerous thing to do. So these four words, somehow they all refer to arguing or making arguments. If the word argus shows up, you should probably treat it differently. This model doesn't. So, I don't know. Most of the time, though, you can probably say different words with the same stem are going to correspond to the same concept in some predictive model, so we can just throw away all of the last part and keep the first part. Not the case with Argus. So this is called stemming, super old algorithm going back to the 60s. The stemmer that most people use these days is, you know, only 35 years old. It's a lot of code. It's not super complicated. This is what the Porter stemmer looks like. All it's really doing is going through your document and applying some sequence of pretty simple replacement rules. So if you see some suffix like SSES, you'll replace it by SS. I don't know, if you see OUSLI, you'll replace it by OUS. So analogously becomes analogous, so on and so forth. You just apply all of these replacement rules one after the other. That gives you a uniquely defined single stem for every word, at least in the English language. And in Python with these libraries, it's something pretty simple to do ourselves. So this is some library function which runs the stemmer that was on the previous slide. We can import that, run on each of our words, replace them by their stem. So what is it? nltk.stem.porter.porterstemmer. Okay. nltk.stem.porterstemmer. And it'll replace the word by word equals stemmer dot stem word. Okay? This time it'll actually take a while to churn through the whole document, because for once it's actually doing something. What are we down to? 5,000. Everyone thinks it's any of these steps are actually going to work. I'm surprised. 15,000. All right. I don't know. We made some progress. So we're down to about 15K. I mean, we got rid of capitalization. We got rid of punctuation. We replaced all words by their unique stem. Why do we still have so many? Yeah, I mean, noise, I think, is a reasonable answer. We still have all those proper nouns. We still have all of those misspelled words. We still have all these things like numbers and so forth, hyphenated words, who knows what in this document. So we didn't get far by trying to handle all of the reasonable words. We still have a lot of junk words. We maybe have some intuition in mind that says those junk words are not going to be very useful in a predictive sense. So maybe we can just try and filter them out in some trivial way and discard them. So, okay, we'll move on to that in a second. First of all, I just wanted to finish off with a comment about stemming. I don't like it. I don't believe in it. It's fantastic for things like search engines. Like if you want to build your Google and the person searches for cats, it should return results that have the word cat. This makes a lot of sense, right? These are equivalent concepts in terms of what your query meant. In terms of some predictive analytics task, I don't know if it's a good idea. Should you treat a word like argus as the same as argue? Maybe not. For something like beer reviews, should you treat a word like waste and wasted as being equivalent to each other? You know, this beer was a waste of money. I got totally wasted on this beer. Those are not really equivalent uses. One of them is negative, one of them is positive. So that's some information that stemming is throwing away, and it threw that information away without actually saving us very many words. So that's just my personal opinion. I think let's keep each version of the word as though it's its own unique concept. And then we'll do a very simple solution to filter all of these very, very uncommon words, our noise, our misspellings, our proper nouns, whatever you like, just by finding what are the most frequently used words in our corpus. So we'll just go through our word list, we'll count the word frequency, we'll sort it, we'll take the top 1,000. Okay, so all I'm doing here is taking my count followed by the word itself. If I sort that and reverse it, then my first 1,000 entries will be the 1,000 most popular words. And I'm going to use these 1,000 words to build my fixed length feature representation. So to do this, I'm going to want to build a feature vector, so I'm going to want to associate each of these words to a feature index. So I'm just going to have a mapping that maps a word to a position. So I can now say for each of those 1,000 words, which feature index is it associated with? So guesses as to the most popular word? The. A. These mostly sound reasonable. Let's look at the 20 most popular. Okay, so what do we have? The and of is with it to the I. Oh, we still stemmed everything. Let's get rid of that stemming. So we got some funny things like THI, sort of the stem for this. Let's see what we get when we don't do that. Okay. So are the and of is with to this I it in but beer. Okay? So that very head, not as for on. So amongst the top words, there's kind of a lot of junk and a few words that seem relevant to our task. Hopefully if you look down the other end, we'll have a few more kind of beer specific words that we think are likely to be predictive. Okay, so before too long you get into reasonable words that seem to be very popular in beer corpora, which hopefully are going to be predictive of positive or negative sentiment. Like overall, thick, sweetness, IPA is probably going to be a very negative word, orange, slightly, so on and so forth. Okay, so that's a fixed length representation. I don't know if it's satisfying or not. I mean, we tried to do all of these fancy tricks, and in the end, all we did was take the most popular words, throw the rest away. It's a very simple way of coming up with a fixed-length feature representation of any document. So it may or may not be a good fixed-length representation, but at least it's something we can experiment with to find out whether it's going to be useful in a predictive capacity or whether we're actually missing amongst those 35,000 words that we discarded something that is predictively important. Okay, so why don't we try and use our fixed length representation to solve some simple task like sentiment analysis, yeah? Yeah, I mean, that's a hypothesis that we're going to have to test. I mean, with this type of bag of words representation, we're making this basic assumption that syntax doesn't add very much. So we can just throw away the order in which words were used or what are the words that we use nearby the word best. We're just going to hope that that is not discarding too much. And even if there is some such noise, it's very rare that you use the word best in a negative sense and very common that you use it in a positive sense. I don't know. But yes, we'll try and see ways in a minute to resolve that. Actually, probably I'll make it a homework exercise to see if you do need some notion of sentence structure or if you don't. But for the moment, we don't have it. Let's see how far we can get without it. So we want to train some kind of model that looks like this. Simple linear regression, we're using these counts, so these frequencies we have of our 1,000 most popular words, and we want to fit the rating as being some offset multiplied by the inner product of these counts with our parameters. So that what that is saying is that for each time we see a particular word in a review, how much does that influence our prediction that the rating is going to go up or down according to theta for that word? So a single instance of the word not, does that make our prediction of the rating go up or down? Okay, so we've got to define our feature representation. We're going to start with just a, this is going to be a vector of 1,000 zeros. What we want to do is now just walk through our entire review. If the word is one of those 1,000 most popular, we'd like to increment the counter for the corresponding position. So for word in r.split, if the word is in our, what do we call that? We called it the word set, so it's a set of these 1,000 most popular words. Then we want to increment the corresponding dimension of the feature. So feet, we find the ID of that word, plus equals 1. Okay? And that's going to build our 1,000-dimensional bag of words model for the most popular words. Finally, we'll just append this offset term to the very end, which is going to count for the term alpha in the slides. All right. We can run this for all of our documents. You know, this should look pretty familiar by now. Your first 10 ratings is your output variables. What does the feature vector look like? I mean, this is the first 20 dimensions of our bag of words model. The words are sorted by popularity. So this is, you know, the word ah appears 4 times. The word, I don't know, beer appears once, so on and so forth. Okay, so let's fit a model. We'll just do regular, good old linear regression, like in week one. This is a function called ridge regression. I don't know how many of you have run into that yet, but that's just regular least squares linear regression with a regularization term, lambda equals 1. So in class, I showed you how to do that with gradient descent. Well, there's a nice library function that does it for you, so regularized linear regression. We'll fit it. We'll get our predictions, whatever they are, and we'll get our parameter vector theta. Okay, so I guess the interesting question is which words turn out to be predictive, which words turn out to be positive, which words turn out to be the most negative. So we can do that just by looking at theta. How do we go about that? So what we'd like to do is sort theta according to the words that have the highest positive and the highest negative weights. So we'd like theta I, comma I, or better yet, the corresponding word for I in range 1,000. We'd like to sort that. Okay, that should be fine. So first entry of this sorted vector is going to be the most negative word, or the word that if it appears, our estimation of the rating goes down by the most. Any guesses? Bad. It can be worse than bad. Terrible. More beery. Maybe no one knows about beer. Skunk, okay? So this is the word that, at least among the 1,000 most popular, that if you see it, it causes you to think the rating is about half a star lower than it would have been if you hadn't seen that word. Okay? So on the other end, what's the most positive word you can think of? Excellent, fantastic. Yeah, I mean, I think you're on the right track. Awesome. Tubular. I mean, probably if you see the word tubular, it is a very positive word. Is it one of the 1,000 most popular beer words, though? Unlikely. So what do we get? Exceptional. See the word exceptional? your estimation of the rating goes up by a quarter of a star. I mean, what else do we have here? Like, the 10 most negative words, or sorry, 10 most positive words, exceptional, always, wonderful, summer, people are just in a good mood, I guess, impressed, drank. I don't know what oil is doing there. Someone know about beer? It's a mystery to me. Those are the most positive. Most negative, skunks, skunky. Skunks are really a problematic. Lands, oh, I don't know what this is. Water, visible, straw, flat, unfortunately. I don't know what this is doing. Yeah, would not recommend or something. It's probably correlated with some other combination of words that happens to be very negative. But okay, so we found pretty reasonable, highly positive and highly negative words. The other question is, what did we miss out on with our 1,000-dimensional representation? I mean, somebody suggested jubilar as a possible highly positive word. It doesn't show up amongst the top 1,000. So what would we have gotten if we'd gone from 1,000 to 10,000 dimensions, and what would we lose if we sort of threw away some of our 1,000 dimensions that we did have? So where did the words exceptional and skunk show up, for example? Yeah. That's a funny one. I mean, there is... what do we get for... what do we get for theta of word ID me, for instance? See, me is apparently quite a negative word. I don't know. So there is a nice paper I can dig up for you about restaurant reviews, which says that if people talk about themselves a lot, they probably actually don't like what they're talking about. So in restaurant reviews, if you like a restaurant, you'll talk about the food. If you don't like a restaurant, you'll talk about yourself. So, you know, why could that be? I think it's not so much narcissism as that people just like to, you know, commiserate and talk about the horrible experience they had. You know, it was the worst night of my life. The waiter was horrible to me. You know, I don't know if these results apply for beer, but let's see what happens. I. Okay, I is about neutral. So, I don't know. But certainly, I mean, recommend is probably some weird effect like that. People don't want to use this word unless they're using a particular sentence structure that happens to be incredibly negative. Apparently talking about yourself is, in general, not a good thing in reviews. But are these words like skunk and exceptional very common, yeah? Not really. This is probably too close to the borderline. I mean, this is only based on 5,000 reviews. So you probably need to train it on 50,000 or 500,000 before you were really confident that being 1/20th of a star more negative was a significant effect. Yeah? How can you check if your implementation is a problem? I mean, this is a regular linear regression model, so we can test if it works. I mean, other than looking at your mean squared errors and residuals and comparing it to different models, for this type of model, I'm not sure if I have a particularly sophisticated way. I mean, of course, you have things like validation sets, which you can use to compare different models. And you have all these error diagnostics, which we can say use to say, are our modeling assumptions justified or not? Are all of our errors in one direction or another direction? I guess these are more machine learning answers rather than Python implementation answers, though. Yeah? What's that? Yeah, there's no dimensionality reduction happening here. We're doing the naive thing and just saying, let's use nothing but the counts to find which dimensions we want to keep. Obviously, words like skunk and skunky are probably the same word. If we were smart and used dimensionality reduction, we'd find that they show up in similar contexts. I mean, stay tuned in for 2 weeks to see the answer to that, and we'll see the dimensionality reduction solution to this problem, where we can find what are the dimensions that explain why certain similar words are used in similar contexts. Okay? All right. So, I mean, moving on. We were trying to answer this question of whether 1,000 dimensions was somehow just enough, or whether we lost a lot by not including a lot more, or whether we would have lost anything if we'd included less. So the question is, where do these words like skunk and skunky and exceptional show up amongst our 1,000 most common words? So what is the word ID of, I don't know, skunky? 685. What about something like exceptional? 990. Okay, so maybe this is a cause for alarm. Or maybe it's not. I don't know. Exceptional beers are obviously very exceptional, so they're presumably very positive, but presumably very rare as well. So we kind of only just kept this word. This was the 991st most commonly used word, and it was also the most positive. So if we'd taken a representation that was a tiny little bit shorter, or we just sampled our data set differently, we might have just completely discarded this incredibly positive word and would have had a model that was predictively not as good. On the other hand, how much does that word actually show up? So only 60 times out of 5,000. So the most positive word, the one we think might be the most predictively useful, is very rare. By the time we keep only 1,000 words, then any words rarer than that are only showing up in about 1% of reviews. So, yeah, we kind of have to figure out this trade-off for how many dimensions we should keep. As we take more words, they're going to be more and more extreme outliers, which could be extremely predictive, but they're also going to be much, much, much rarer and are not actually going to influence the quality of our solution all that much. Okay, so that's about the moral of the story. What about all those junk words that appeared toward the beginning? So we saw that our 20 or so most popular words were things like and of and the. Do any of those get positive weights? Doesn't look like it, does it? Yes, you can definitely also remove them. I guess the question is whether we need to or not. In this case, it doesn't look like they're doing too much harm. Almost all of them have about zero weight. Would have been nice to have an example where they had large positive or large negative weights. I mean, any guess why such words could have large non-zero values? Maybe not for beer reviews, but for some other setting. I mean, the simplest one is they could just track the length, for example. Maybe not for beers, but maybe for movies or for book reviews like you have in the assignment. Maybe people just like to write a lot if they really like or, I don't know, if they really hate something. Whereas if their opinion is more neutral, they don't have much to say. So the only way this simple type of model we have so far can track that is by saying, I'm just going to count the instances, the number of instances of these very basic words. The more those show up, the longer the review must be. Therefore, those are going to get very positive or negative quantities. Didn't happen here, but it can happen elsewhere. Another reason is maybe they just show up with sort of very positive or very negative phrases. So the word the or and is part of some multi-word phrase. I don't know if you're trying to classify documents as being movies versus not movies. Maybe there's so many movies whose names start with the word the, like The Matrix and The Dark Knight and so forth, that you'd think that word was very predictive of a certain category, even though it's kind of just a junk word that shows up with other predictive words. So, I don't know. Is that a problem? Do you actually want to fix it? There are a couple of ways. One is just, if it's tracking the length, stick the length in there as a feature. And then the model will just learn to use the length feature rather than trying to use a bunch of words that somehow indirectly track the length. The other option is just, use NLTK. It has a stop word list, so we can just remove all the stop words. Here's what they look like. So all of these things are going to go away. It's not something I usually do personally. There are some arguments for and against it, which I'll sort of show in a minute. But, I mean, two basic problems are, for one, it's very it's specific to English or to any other language where we have a predefined list of stop words that some humans sat down and defined. And another one is stop words are going to be a very domain-specific concept anyway. I think beer is a beer stop word, right? But it doesn't show up in a stop word list. I mean, otherwise, why might you want to remove them? One, they don't contain much information, but they're a huge fraction of your corpus. So we could come up with just a more concise document representation if we were to throw away all of these junk words, and probably that wouldn't hurt the predictive power of our model too much. Another is that they do convey information by being correlated with a feature you don't want. So that could mean that it's hard to interpret the parameters of your model because all of these words like me and the and I are showing up as having high weight, but they're only having high weight because they tend to appear as part of longer expressions. So that could kind of make your model hard to visualize. Like I was saying a minute ago, you could be just thinking the word the is predictive of a certain category in a document categorization task because it shows up with other certain words. So, I don't know. Remove stop words if you don't like them. I tend not to. If you can't visualize your model well, maybe you should come up with a better model rather than trying to throw away the bad features. And there's a simpler solution anyway, which we've kind of been hinting at for the last half hour, is let's just use n-grams. Okay? So if some word is appearing in longer phrases and it's predictive because it appears in those longer phrases, why not just handle those longer phrases explicitly? So far we've tried to build our n-gram models just by counting the appearances of all the unique lowercase unpunctuated words in the document. Let's just do the same thing for pairs of words, triplets of words, whatever you like, until you run out of features to represent things. So rather than taking the 1,000 most popular words, take the 1,000 most popular words or bigrams or trigrams or so on and so forth. And this is going to be sort of a simple way of bringing syntax back into our model without really having to model grammar explicitly. So we said this is the typical bag of words model. I can randomly commute the words. I get exactly the same representation. That's no longer true. As soon as they add bigrams, things like good and not good are now going to correspond to totally different concepts, and the model should be capable of learning them. So, this is now going to add some very loose notion of syntax back into our model, which is the good part. On the downside, it's going to increase our dictionary size by a whole ton. So I'm not going to go through this in the code. It'll be in the next homework, which will be out on Wednesday. But you can imagine that going from unigrams to bigrams and trigrams could potentially increase the size of your dictionary, I mean, quadratically or even cubically. Obviously, it's going to be very, 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 very sparse. Most bigrams that could occur won't occur. But we've just made our problems of dictionary size and dictionary sparsity much, 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 much worse than they were before. Now, of course, we're still going to solve this by just saying, well, I'm going to cut it off somewhere. I'm going to take the 10,000 most popular words, but we could run into some kind of double counting effect because now there's a lot of overlap between different unigrams and bigrams and trigrams. So you can imagine for some rating predictor on movies, you'd find the bigram Adam Sandler is incredibly negative, but the words Adam and Sandler are also somewhat negative, and any bigram that ends with Adam is somewhat negative. Any bigram that starts with Sandler is somewhat negative as well. And really, these are all negative because they're all referring to the same concept, but sort of simple bigram representation is going to add a whole bunch of additional features into the model that correspond to that one concept. So maybe we're wasting a lot of dimensionality. So this is kind of a, I think, subtle issue with using a bigram representation. It's really not clear that given a fixed length of feature vectors that we can afford, whether going from unigrams to bigrams is actually going to help us, because we're massively increasing the number of features, but we're possibly not massively increasing the number of informative features. So amongst those 1,000 or 10,000 or whatever most popular words, we might have very many that are nearly equivalent, which might not have been such a problem with unigrams. So it's very sort of not obvious, given this kind of sentiment classification task, whether, given a fixed length of representation, whether we're going to do better by throwing away syntax and using unigrams, or keeping a little bit of syntax and using bigrams, but possibly having some kind of redundancy in our features. So one more thing to trade off. Okay, so that's about it for regular binary classification. I've got time for a couple more things. So, all right, we've done good old regression. We can, of course, use the same type of model to do binary classification or multi-class classification. So I'll sort of, I think I have time to do a quick case study where we'd like to find different language that's used for different, say, star ratings. And we'd like to treat these each as being separate classes. So this could be, rather than a regression problem to predict the number between 1 and 5, it could be a five-class classification problem if people use very different language for one star versus five-star reviews. And then to adapt our model to classification settings, well, before we had just regular logistic regression where we'd say the probability of a label given a particular class would be given by the sigmoid of the features and the parameters. So 1 on 1 plus e to the negative is an inner product. And the non-label would be e to the be 1 minus the previous expression. So we can now extend that to do multi-class classification just by saying, well, I'm going to say I have some fixed set of classes, which could be five different review scores, and I want to say for every word in my fixed length representation, how likely is that word to show up for a one-star review, for a two-star review, for a three-star review, for a four-star review, for a five-star review? And then I'd like to say, amongst these five classes, which of them is most likely? So I'll take my score for each class, and I'll divide it by the sum of scores for all of the classes. So I'll say exp divided by all possible classes, e to the theta c prime x. So this is a very simple multi-class classifier. I have, for every one of my five classes corresponding to five different ratings, how much is each word likely to be associated with that class? And I can just, again, get a probability of each document, which is my fixed length feature representation being associated with a particular rating, which we can fit using good old max likelihood. Okay, so I'll just I'll just skip the summary and talk about a quick case study using this. So what we'd like to do is come up with some multi-class classifier that, given some free text reviews, figures out which words in this review correspond to different aspects of the product. So which of these sentences is talking about feel, look, smell, taste, and overall impression? This would be a simple way to use bag of words models to do something like review summarization at the level of sentences. Can we figure out, based on the patterns of variation in these five-dimensional ratings, the words like dark brown only show up when the look score is very high and is somehow less dependent on the other terms, so this must somehow be a sentence about the appearance of the product. And, you know, if we come up with such a system, we can build all kinds of cool applications. The reason I originally got into this problem, because I was looking at these multi-dimensional ratings on Wikipedia, these are gone now. Wikimedia decided they were not very useful, but they would be useful if you could figure out, well, what kind of linguistic features correspond to a Wikipedia article being not trustworthy or not objective or not complete or not well-written. So could you figure out from huge corpuses of these multi-dimensional ratings, like the ones we've been working with, which parts of a document correspond to which dimension of the ratings? And it shows up kind of beers, cigars, which is a very important application domain, hotel reviews, and things like audiobooks, where people talk about the narrator and the author kind of orthogonally from each other. So you might like to automatically figure out whether a person's sentiment is positive about one of these two aspects or which sentences refer to each of those two aspects. Okay, so we can use this to build sentiment models for the different aspects, summarize opinions, and also just to understand the types of positive and negative language people use to describe different aspects. So what we'd like is to take some huge corpus of reviews that look like this and produce some output that looks like this, which says that for each sentence in the review, which is most likely to belong to each of these five different sensory aspects, minus, what are you missing for beer? Sound is apparently not that important. So we're going to need to do two things. If we had labels for all of these sentences, we could build these multi-class rating prediction models. Yeah. So if we already knew which sentence was about smell, we could say what words correspond to one-star smell, what words correspond to two-star smell, what words correspond to three-star smell, and so on and so forth. On the other hand, if we had these different models that said, okay, what words correspond to one-star smell, what words correspond to one-star taste, we could easily produce sentence labels. So we have this kind of chicken and egg problem. If we had good labels for each of our sentences, we could build a good model. If we had a good model for the different aspects, we could easily label our sentences. But to begin with, we have neither of those things. So in other words, we have each of these two sub-problems, both of which somehow depends on the other one having already been solved. So like we usually do with these types of problems, we'll just randomly initialize the whole model somewhere, and we'll just alternately solve these two sub-problems. So we're going to have some funny model that looks like this, which says, what's the probability that a person is talking about one of these five sensory aspects given the bag of words representation of the sentence and the rating they've given to that aspect? And we can just find this by summing over all of the words in our bag of words representation and saying, how likely is this word to show up with this aspect? And how likely is this word to show up with this aspect given some particular sentiment? So what's the probability that a word is used to describe taste, look, smell, overall, whatever? And what's the probability that a word would describe taste only if the taste is rated 1 star or only if the taste is rated 5 stars? So you can kind of think you're going to find things like nouns and adjectives. Nouns are used to describe some particular aspect. Adjectives are used to describe positive or negative sentiment associated with that aspect. So that's what we'd like to pull out of our bag of words representation, which are the nouns that describe an aspect, which are the adjectives that describe sentiment about an aspect. Okay, so we'll just sort of alternately solve these two procedures where we say, given some estimate of a model that says what words are likely to be used to describe each aspect, can we label the sentences that maximize the likelihood? In other words, can we come up with the labels that are most consistent with our model? And secondly, given our sentence labels, can we predict a better model? And we'll just keep alternating between these two steps until we end up with somehow labels that are hopefully good. We'll keep doing this until no further progress is possible. Okay, so we need to tell if this is working or not. So we better pay some humans to label some beer sentences. So I labeled 100 beer sentences for validation. So it is this sentence about taste, look, smell, feel, overall impression. I sent Mechanical Turk to label 10,000 more, and I said, how much do they agree with my 100? They have no idea, okay? So these Amazon workers that you pay sort of 1 cent per task are not very good at figuring out whether a sentence is about taste or mouthfeel or something like that. So what we tried to do is hire some beer experts to label beer sentences. And there's this fantastic service for this called Odesk, where you can recruit people with specific skills. So we came up with a job description that asks some simple questions about beer. And they also have this sort of interface you can use to permanently spy on them so you can see what work they're doing and sort of help them label beer sentences better. And then we got something like 90% agreement. So they're labeling 10,000 sentences about as well as I would label 100. And we can now use this to say, is our model working sufficiently? And, okay, this fairly simple model gives us something like 70 to 80% accurate labels on beers, and also works to some extent on hotels and cigars and so forth too. And you can also use it for summarization, but what's more interesting is to see what kind of language models do you learn. So can you discover, just with a bag of words representation, the extent to which particular choices of words are used to describe different sensory aspects, and the extent to which different words are chosen when your impression about an aspect is particularly positive or negative. So you do tend to get a pretty good separation between nouns and adjectives with this pretty simple idea. For instance, if you're talking about feel, you use words like carbonation. Look, you'll talk about head. Smell, you'll talk about aroma and sweet. And taste, you'll talk about taste and flavor. And then people do have some pretty colorful linguistic choices when they really don't like something. So I won't show you because it's not showable, but the one-star reviews are very different from the two-star reviews, mainly to do with, like, human bodily fluids and so forth. But there's some pretty interesting and colorful language even for two-star reviews. So you say something is thin and watery. If it feels bad, you say it's yellow and macro. If it looks bad, you say it's bland and disappointing if it's overall bad. The one kind of exception here is that corn, which is obviously a noun, seems to be a negative word for smell and taste. Any guesses there? I believe it requires knowledge of beer to answer this question. I think the point is that beer shouldn't contain corn, right? So a beer containing corn is technically an adjunct lager. It's like used as a substitute for... Does anyone know about beer? Doesn't matter. Anyway, beer containing corn is not real beer. So even though it's a noun, it's associated with non-beers like Bud Light and is therefore a very negative word. On the other hand, people kind of use very similar words when they're positive about something. This is kind of another well-known result from linguistics that says there's only really one way to say you like something, but there are many, 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 many different ways to say you dislike something. Okay, but the moral of the story is that with a pretty simple bag of words approach, we could develop some kind of fancy multi-class classification model that could automatically figure out whether different sentences were describing different sensory aspects and also figuring out which words are associated with which different ratings. And you can recover some nice results from linguistics. And in this type of approach, modeling syntax probably won't help all that much, but you can look to the next homework to convince yourself of that. Okay, so that's about it for today. I mean, there are a few other basic ideas for this sort of linear regression type model for text. Of course, you can incorporate things like linguistic structure just by counting the use of various parts of speech, so on and so forth. But I guess I'll leave it there. So homework is due now. We'll do some midterm recap on Wednesday. Midterms next Monday, and we'll come back to text in 2 weeks.
This has been a UC San Diego podcast. For more, visit podcast.ucsd.edu.